Welcome to the CM Finance third fiscal quarter earnings release conference. Your hosts for today's call are Mike Maurer and Jay Agarwal. Operator assistance is available anytime during this conference by pressing star zero. A question-and-answer session will follow the presentation. I'll now turn the call over to your speakers. Please begin.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. With me today are Chris Jansen, my Co-Chief Investment Officer, and Jay Agarwal, our CFO. Before we begin, Jay will first discuss some general information and comment on forward-looking statements. Jay?
I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded. Please note that this call is a property of CM Finance, Inc., and that any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by using the telephone numbers provided in our press release announcing this call. I'd also like to call your attention to the customary safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information. Today's conference call may also include forward-looking statements and projections, and we ask that you refer to our most recent filing with the SEC for important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We will not update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our website at www.cmfn-inc.com. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to our Chairman and CEO, Mike Maurer.
Thank you, Jay. I'm going to discuss current market conditions, developments in our portfolio, and our outlook before turning the call back to Jay to review our financial results. We'll conclude today's call with the Q&A session. We celebrated our first anniversary as a public company in February. The first calendar quarter of 2015 certainly felt much different from the first calendar quarter last year. We were concerned by increasing leverage multiples, weakening structural protections, and tightening yields, all of this driven by substantial capital inflows into the leverage finance market last year. A different set of challenges presented itself this year. The total volume of financing for companies raising $350 million or less is off 45% versus the first quarter last year. We've seen very few new LBOs. Many of our peers have noticed a similar phenomenon in that they haven't been as many good deals for us to invest in the first part of this year compared to last year. Origination of quality transactions is always a challenge, of course. That said, because there isn't as much sense of chasing deals, we've seen a premium for the middle market debt over large, broadly syndicated deals widen to 135 basis points. Leverage hasn't changed much year over year, and there's still a preponderance of covenant-lite loans among the broadly syndicated deals. So as with last year, we remain very selective with our investments. We've invested in two deals that entered our pipeline during the quarter while deciding not to proceed with over 25 transactions. That 7% hit rate is an overstatement number that doesn't really capture how selective we've been. Several dozen deals that we've looked at this quarter did not even include merit in our official pipeline. We have continued to be active managers of our exposure to oil and gas sector. Looking back to September, our investments in exploration and production, midstream, and oil field services represented approximately 25% of our portfolio at fair value. In December, that percentage was 20.5%. As of March 31, our exposure was 19.2% at fair value. A portion of that decline is attributable to the portfolio growth away from the oil and gas sector. A portion of that reduction is a result in changes in our marks, and a small portion is due to our active management of our positions. We had the opportunity to swap out of our loan in Banu in favor of increasing our exposure to Kalis. I want to walk you through our investment thesis there. The new oil and gas is an offshore exploration and production company in the Gulf of Mexico. Its assets were formerly owned by ATP and were carved out as part of the bankruptcy estate. The company is owned by a group of former lenders to ATP. The new's production is a mix of oil and gas with limited hedges over the next 12 months. Talos is another exploration and production company which operates on the North Slope of Alaska. It was formed in April 2014 to purchase the Alaskan assets of Pioneer Natural Resources. Apollo is the sponsor. Talos's production is almost exclusively liquids. When we compare the two companies, we take comfort in Talos's strong hedging profile over the next couple of years, and I'd emphasize over a couple of years. It's more substantial proved developed producing reserves, and it's lower cost to develop the proved and probable reserves. Its cost per well is significantly lower, which we believe reduces the risk of its capital expenditures. Talos has less debt and lower leverage when compared with Banu, despite the fact that these two loans had the same coupon when issued. Finally, Talos enjoys the continued support and commitment from Apollo, a premier sponsor, with a stated strategy in energy. As part of our active management of the portfolio, we sold our second lien position in Banu and purchased additional second lien loans in Talos at a net cost of approximately 30 basis points across the entire position. During the quarter, we made five investments, including two new investments in portfolio companies and three additional investments in existing portfolio companies that included Talos. We had one realization, Banu. One of those new portfolio company investments is the DIP loan to LightSquared, which I spoke about on our last quarterly call. We expect the milestones required to extend the DIP's maturity to be reached, which would extend the maturity from June 1st to December 31st. We think the DIP loan will remain outstanding at least until the third quarter of this year. In March, we invested $4 million in a new first lien senior secured notes issued by Nathan's Famous. Nathan's is a licensing company with a franchise system of restaurants as well as wholesale and retail distribution of its famous hot dogs. We had 26 companies in the portfolio as of March 31st, with a total fair value of approximately $311 million. As of today's call, we have investments in 27 companies. We invested in the unsecured debt of Nexio Solutions in the secondary market in April. Nexio is the third largest chemical and plastics distributor in North America and the fourth largest in the world. The company is owned by TPG. TPG invested over $500 million in equity to date in the company. Nexio's notes mature March 2018 and yield over 14% to maturity at the time of our purchase. We are currently expecting two full realizations this quarter. We have received a payoff notice from BBG, where we own approximately $8.2 million of revolver and first lien term loan, and we've received an indication that CPG, where we own approximately $14.5 million of secured notes, will also be repaid this quarter. BBG is scheduled to repay at a premium of 105 late this week or early next week, which will mean a realized IRR in excess of 20%. CPG would repay at a premium as well at 114. If CPG indeed repays our investment this quarter, our realized IRRs would also be in excess of 20%. As we consider our pipeline, we have two types of deals we are focusing on. First, we have our core, which are senior secured loans to middle market companies. We remain focused on direct origination to allow us to invest in high quality secured loans. The second type of deal we are tracking are secondary market opportunities similar to Nexio, where we think there may be attractive entry points into existing debt. These opportunities are more seasoned and may have higher yields than new origination. Given our investment team's background in stressed, distressed investing and our relationship with Cyrus Capital, we continue to look for good credits in dislocated situations with strong management teams and solid capital structures. We think there may be additional opportunities for us in this calendar year. We have continued to maintain a balance between first and second lien investments, As of March 31, we held approximately 49% first lien and about 46% second lien, with the remainder in warrant and equity positions, the bulk of which is our position in Virgin's equity. Our lockup on the Virgin stock is scheduled to expire May 18th. We do not expect to be long-term holders of the Virgin equity investment. The unrealized gain on our Virgin shares declined from $10.6 million to $4.7 million between December 31st and March 31st. That change in the unrealized gain was the most significant driver of the change in our net asset value of the portfolio this quarter. Based upon Virgin's closing price yesterday, our unrealized gain would be essentially unchanged from quarter end. As I've stated previously, our target for portfolio leverage is 0.6 to 0.7 times. As of December 31st, we were 0.66 times levered. As of March 31st, we were 0.58 times levered. While we were marginally below our target at quarter end, we have had net investments of approximately $23 million since March 31st. This additional portfolio activity since quarter end has taken us back squarely into our target leverage range. The fair value of our portfolio declined slightly between December and March from $316 to $311 million. The largest driver of the move was Virgin stock price. Virgin accounted for $5.9 million of the change in our net asset value. The weighted average yield on our debt portfolio and income-producing securities at cost increased from 10.97% as of December 31st to 11.2% as of March 31st. This improvement was driven largely by our decision to sell the position in Venu, which yielded 8.9% at cost, and to increase our position in Kalis, where our yield at cost on the purchases during the quarter was 14.24%. As always, we are focused on opportunities to improve the average yield on the portfolio in a prudent and disciplined way as investment opportunities allow. During the third fiscal quarter, we earned our full base and a portion of our incentive management fee. Based upon our current portfolio and the activity I have mentioned, we expect to continue to earn our full base management fee and our full incentive fee during the quarter ended June 30th, 2015. Additionally, we continue to have an active dialogue with the SBA regarding our application for an SBIC license. Finally, on May 6th, our board of directors declared a second calendar quarter dividend of 34.69 cents per share payable on July 5th to shareholders of record as of June 18th. With that, I'd like to turn back to Jay to review our results for the third quarter of the fiscal year. Jay?
Thanks, Mike. Our net investment income for the quarter was $4.7 million, or 35 cents per share. Our aggregate net realized and unrealized losses were $6.65 million, or 49 cents per share. The weighted average yield at cost on our debt portfolio was 11.2%. Our debt portfolio was comprised of 88% floating rate and 12% fixed rate investments. Our average portfolio company investment was approximately $11 million, and our largest portfolio company investment was $20 million. Additional information regarding the composition of our portfolio is included in our Form 10-Q filed yesterday. With respect to our financing facility, we had $26.3 million borrowed under our $50 million facility at quarter end. As of today, we have $8 million available under this facility, $5 million in cash, and over $22 million in expected proceeds from the CPG and BBG transactions Mike mentioned earlier. Lastly, I wanted to address our capital gains incentive fee accrual. As of 12/31, we had accrued but not paid capital gains incentive fees on net gains. However, at March 31st, primarily due to the decline in the value of a Virgin America stock, we were in a net loss position and therefore reversed the entire accrual. As of today, there is no accrued or paid capital gains incentive fee. Also, capital gains incentive fees are calculated on a tax basis which is based on fair value of assets at the time of our IPO, and not on a GAAP basis, which reflects our original cost pre-IPO. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Mike.
Thanks, Jay. We are proud of the performance of our portfolio. We have no loans on non-accrual. Our underwriting is focused on management, capital structure, security, and covenants for the protection and preservation of our shareholders' capital. We will continue to actively manage the portfolio to minimize the risk we take while positioning ourselves to drive returns for our investors. Before we go to Q&A, I'd like to share a few thoughts on GE Capital. GE has been a significant presence in the middle market for many years. While we don't consider them to be a direct competitor, their influence has had an effect on us, as it has with everyone else participating in the middle market. GE has been aggressive in holding down pricing at the more conservative, lower leverage portion of the first lien market, which they can do because their cost of capital is much, much lower than BDCs and senior funds. That inures to our benefit sometimes. We partnered with GE on Bird Electric, where they were the first lien and we were the second. On one of the deals in our pipeline today, we would also be a beneficiary in partnership with GE, where we are looking at a second lien. GE Capital has announced a transition. Their portfolio and platform are for sale. JP Morgan and Citigroup are leading the process. And we know a number of the parties that are bidding on those platforms. To be clear, we see this as a sale of an ongoing business, not a liquidation play. So while it may be renamed, we think there will be an ongoing lender playing the role that GE currently plays. Existing positions aren't going away, and there will continue to be a lender taking significant positions in the first lien middle market debt. Maybe over the short term, GE will be a little less aggressive bidding for new business due to the transition period. But we don't foresee anything significantly changing in the landscape once the process concludes. There will still be a lender anchoring large portions of middle market below the yields where we are targeting to invest our capital. Depending on who the successor to GE is and their cost of capital, we may see a derivative effect to both the first and second lien pricing that widens out and would obviously be a benefit to us. And with that, operator, we'd like to open up the line to Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will conduct the question-and-answer session. If you would like to state a question, please press star 1 on your phone now, and you'll be placed into the queue in order received. Please listen for your name to be announced. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question comes from Robert Dodd from Raymond James. Please state your question.
Hi, guys. thanks for a lot of detail on call, as always. Just looking at the prepayments that you've indicated may occur, I mean, BBG, including the Force, 13.5, CPG, 14. You know, can you give us a little color on how that obviously contrasts? I mean, there's a somewhat above the current kind of going rate and average portfolio yield. So can you give us a color on, you know, how you expect pricing to move going forward and you know, how you expect, you know, basically to replace the earnings from those potential assets?
Absolutely, Robert, and thank you for the question. Let me put in a little bit of context here. So during the quarter ended March 31, the ads were at about an 1140 average rate. The pay downs were at about 9.5%. The add-ons in the current quarter were a little shy of 1110. Nexio Solutions was over 14%. The others were anywhere from YRC, which is, you know, a little over 8%, up to, you know, 13.5% on the Kalis add-ons. In our pipeline, I would say that we are continuing to focus around an average rate of around 11%. While a year ago I would have said that we saw a lot of opportunities in an average of 11 to 12, I'd say today it's more of a 10 to 11 and on both sides of that range. So there's no doubt that the environment we're in, I mentioned earlier that we're not seeing aggressiveness on the leverage multiples out there. We are seeing aggressiveness on pushing price down a bit. So we are going to continue to be conservative in the way we deploy capital. That having been said, as we look at where we're operating and our pipeline, we could continue to be fully deployed even after realizations of those two. The other thing is, if you look at our portfolio, and we've said this all along, that we do maintain some liquid names, and I'll point out two that are very, very conspicuous, Crestwood and YRC, and those are low-yielding assets where we've got over $30 million. So to the extent we're redeploying at 10 to 11 and we're taking off, you know, 7.5 to 8.5, we think that we can continue to maintain around where we are. I would not say that our expectation is we will increase our average yield, which we actually did in the last quarter.
Got it. Thank you. And then just an additional clarification on the if they pay at if they do prepay BBG at 105 and CPG at 114, and they're currently marked about par at the end of the quarter, about at amortized cost, rather. Would those prepayment penalties, would that show up in income or as capital gains? So I presume as income, but just want to clarify.
Yeah, to the extent that any borrower prepays, it will show up in NII income.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Meryl Ross from Wunderlich Securities. Please state your question.
Good afternoon. It appears to me that the timing of the onboarded investments in the first quarter was sort of weighted towards the back end. But you talk about having deployed $24 million quarter to date and here in the second quarter. So can you talk about the timing of investments and pay downs and whether that's a tailwind this quarter?
Yes, absolutely. So last quarter of approximately $37 million of deployments, less than 50% of that was done prior to March 1st. Light Squared was in for a little bit during the period there. And really, other than that, there wasn't much deployed until March. And then if you look at this quarter, we've talked about net $23 million. Gross, there was $24 million deployed quarter to date. And of that $24 million, all but $5 million was deployed in the first 25 days of April. So that'll be out there for a while. We'd expect that, you know, today is the 12th of May, so it'll be more than halfway through the quarter before BBG repays. Our expectation is that the earliest at this point is June 1 for the repayment around CPG. And we do have a pretty, you know, solid calendar. I bookend it at 30 to 50 million of investments that are reasonably probable in our pipeline now.
And any comment on the weighted average yield of what you've circled up or in fact invested so far this quarter?
I would put it in a 10% plus or minus because they're straddling. There's nothing that's 14 and there's nothing that's 8.
Okay, thank you.
In the pipeline.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Greg Mason from KBW. Please state your question.
Great. Thanks, guys. Just a quick follow-up clarification on Robert's question on the repayments. For example, CPG, it's marked at par, but your cost basis is still $14.1 million versus the $14.5 million par. Will, in the first quarter, that unamortized OID, will that difference come into income and then you will have a reversal of unrealized appreciation, or is that unamortized OID just going to be flat appreciation and no impact to the revenue line?
No, that's right. The unamortized OID will go in as interest income.
So you will, the entire amount of OID will come in as interest income, and the prepayment penalty will come in as interest income.
And then you will reverse out the appreciation below the line. Got it.
That's okay. Right.
Perfect. Perfect. And then on one question on the portfolio, you know, looks like new standard last quarter was written at 90% of par. It's now down to 84% of par. Any commentary you're willing to give on that credit?
Yeah, sure. We continue to be, I think, conservative around looking at our energy portfolio. You know, while the market is, very, very happy with the run-up, I think we're 61, 67, give or take, on WTI and Brent today. We think there's a lag effect before the clients that we lend to benefit from increases in the oil price. Almost, the vast majority of that oil price has been post 331. So just a couple data points for you. When we had kind of made underwriting decisions and we had been, I think, fairly conservative in haircutting EBITDA on cash flows, that had been a pre-930 context. That was a $90 and above environment. At 12/31, we were at $53. This is WTI price. At 3/31, which is that mark date you're referring to, WTI was at 47 versus the 61 today. From a new standard standpoint, that is one of the smaller credits. It will continue to be one of the credits that over the long term needs additional capital, and so we will be conservative around how we mark that. They will be more dependent down the road on either partners or raising some additional capital. We continue to feel very good about our secured position, and they continue to pay us on a current basis.
Great, great color, thank you. And then last question, just to the extent you're willing to talk about it, on your Virgin America stock. I know you said you don't want to be holders over the long term, but, kind of how are you viewing that? Obviously, you're going to have some big repayments here from other portions of the portfolio. You know, the stock's come under pressure here. Just kind of your appetite for exiting that when the lockup period expires versus holding it for a longer time frame.
Yeah, Greg, thank you, and I appreciate you bringing that up because I know it's something that a lot of people are focused on. When we went into this investment, I will tell you, my hope was that over, the 6 to 12-month period, we'd be able to realize on top of what we had as great returns on the secured debt, another, 25 to 30% return over, a 12-month period, which I think for all of our portfolios, people are overjoyed at 25, 30% returns. When we got to December, we all would have loved to have liquidated at over 100% return in 6 weeks. Today, that return on an absolute basis, not an annual basis, is just shy of 40%. So in the context of where we'd like to be on an annualized basis, that's 75, 80% today. We will look to opportunistically monetize it. Our job is to look to maximize value to the shareholders and to be invested in income producing assets. This one right now is a great return of value. Long term, it's not an income producing, and quite truthfully, we don't get paid to be equity investors. We do take views where we've got long-term perspective, and this is one that over several years we had a great perspective and, knock on wood, the right perspective as of today.
That's great commentary. Thank you. Appreciate it, Mike.
Yep.
Appreciate it, guys.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phones now. At this time, I have no further questions.
Thank you, operator. We'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking to you again next quarter.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for attending.